Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. This is a bit strange because this podcast began in 2006, October 2006. And during that period, people have come and people have gone. Players have been and they've played and they've left again. Staff members, board members, fans, I guess readers and listeners of this podcast have come and gone for various reasons, for good or for bad or whatever. But the one constant, well, apart from me, the other constant is Arsene Wenger. He has always been the manager of Arsenal as long as I've been doing a podcast. It's always been his team selection. It's always been his transfers. It's always been his tactics. It's always been him. And for the very last time with Arsene Wenger as manager, I'm sitting down to talk into a microphone, to spout the usual nonsense and waffle that I have done for the last nearly 12 years. And it feels strange. I know it's the end of a season, and that usually results in a bit of downtime or things not being as hectic as they normally would be, and it's the end of a season is a time for change in many respects. It's when you say goodbye to players, it's when you bring new players in. But now we've got to look forward to a new beginning, a rebirth, a renewal of the football club with a new manager, a new head coach, a new football executive committee, new players coming in. That's always exciting, but down the years, Arsene Wenger has been the constant presence when it comes to the theme of this podcast. Arsenal Football Club and Arsene Wenger, the two have gone hand in hand for the last 22 years. For people who have grown up with Arsene Wenger as manager, who never knew what came before him, there is no Arsenal without Arsene Wenger. There's no frame of reference for that. So for them, I think it's going to be even more strange. I've seen some managers come and go, but if Arsene Wenger is all you've ever known as Arsenal manager, the next phase is going to be unusual. There's no doubt about it, because we haven't done it. We haven't done it for so long. We think about Arsenal, we think about Wenger as manager. We think about Wenger, we think about Arsenal. I'm not saying it's a vicious circle, it's just a circly circle. A round circle, not one of those strange circles with four sides. If only they had a name for that. But look, it's going to be very interesting. That's all I can say. It is going to be very interesting. But right now, we do have one game of the season left. We played on Wednesday night against Leicester. We're still seeking an away point. Our first in seven games. Seven defeats in a row away from home. Apparently, our worst run since the early 60s. I don't know what kind of a record it would set if we don't get a win or get something from the Huddersfield game. I suspect, however, that given they've stayed up during the week with a draw against Chelsea, and then they drew against Man City, didn't they, to get 2 points that they needed. When you look at their last three games, Man City, Chelsea, and Arsenal, on paper, I know on paper, you would... You would not give them much of a chance of getting anything from that game, even if Arsenal's away form might suggest they're going to take all 3 points. But credit to them, they stay up, and I think perhaps they might be, you know, not quite on the beach, but feeling the effects of a few midweek beers and a lack of pressure. The pressure's off now. You know, they might not necessarily down tools, but when you've got what you need to get done in a season done, it's often the case that you just can't raise yourself for it, which is why... I know we've said this before. It's why the Invincibles And the unbeaten season is such an amazing achievement because there were still four games to play in that season. And we've won the title. That's what any team sets out to do. We battled our way through those last four games. It was very difficult for the players, and I think that's a big part of why that achievement is such an incredible thing. But anyway, we've got lots to come. A little bit later, I'll be talking to Tom Williams, who's written a very interesting book about football, which I think many of you will like, so I'll chat to Tom about that. But now, we've got James from Gunnerblog. James, good evening to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm all right. This is not an Arsecast Extra or even an extra Arsecast Extra. This is just a regular Arsecast, but seeing as we haven't spoken this week, I thought we should catch up, and I also thought we should catch up because this is the last podcast we are going to do with Arsene Wenger as manager of Arsenal Football Club. That feels a bit weird.
It does feel weird, actually. When you said that then, I sort of had a bit of a shiver go down my spine. It is so strange. I mean, you know, since I've been doing Gunnerblog, since I've been writing about Arsenal, Arsene Wenger has always been there. And as of Monday morning, that will change. It'll be Arsecast Extra and a brand new era.
Yeah, we don't know quite what an era it's going to be. Will it be the Allegri era? Will it be the Arteta epoch? Will it be the Vieira whatever? I don't know.
The age of Vieira.
The age of Patrick. Yeah, I mean, we don't quite know what's coming next. Arsene Wenger said that on Monday, he's going to take a few days in France. He's going to do a bit of work over there. Then he's going to come back on Thursday, clean out his desk, and that's that, or that's it. Those are the words that he used. And I think perhaps one of the things that we haven't really touched on a lot in recent weeks is just the practicalities of this on a human level, right? We all understand this is going on. Arsenal are going to get a new manager. Arsene Wenger is departing. We said a very fond farewell to him last week at the Emirates Stadium. It was a wonderful day. But the nuts and bolts of it, the ins and outs, the cleaning out your desk, all the bits of papers, all the whatever, all the file, everything you've got accumulated over 22 years, I suspect, I don't have this as concrete evidence, I suspect that Arsene Wenger is perhaps a bit neater than I am, in the sense that he's not going to have shit everywhere all over his office. I think his office is probably a bit more feng shui than mine.
Minimalist.
A bit more minimal, whereas if I had to clean out an office after 22 years, it would probably take me another 22 years.
Yeah, it'd be like one of those sort of Channel 4 documentaries about hoarders, you know, where they get like a super cleaner in to come and sort it out. My desk is like that. I mean, if you could see my desk now, I mean, it's, to be honest, it's mainly pill bottles. I mean, I've got so many different ailments, but there's just everything everywhere. Yeah. I've given quite a lot of thought to that moment, actually. It's something I have been thinking about. When is he actually going to clear his stuff out of London Colney? When's this going to be his final day there? Because as much as we think of the Emirates and the occasion with Burnley as his final game, really 5 days out of seven or 6 days out of seven, his home has been London Colney, has been the training ground, the one that he built, really, the one that was built exactly to his specifications. And I think his last day there, you know, in what has been his working office for 22 years, is going to be a really, really strange one. And surely a really emotional one. I mean, he's done a tremendous job of keeping it together over the past few weeks, much more so than me, I think, much more so than most fans. But I'm sure he'll have a quiet moment to himself on Thursday when he does come back to clear his desk at Colney.
Yeah, he was asked at his press conference yesterday, you know, was he emotional? Was he an emotional man? He said, yes, I'm an emotional guy. But I've learned over the course of being a football manager, he said, I decided very early that in order to survive in this business, you've got to keep your emotions in check. And I think, you know, certainly in the first part of his career at Arsenal, he was a lot less demonstrative, wasn't he? You could sort of see this calm and this zen emanate from him. But then as things have become a bit more challenging over the years, you know, we've seen some outbursts of emotion from Arsene Wenger, whether it's kicking water bottles, whether it's being sent to the stands, whether it's standing there in Old Trafford, like, you know, sort of this crucifixion picture, which was absolutely fantastic. In hindsight, I think that'll be an image that a lot of people will take of Arsene Wenger, even if, you know, at the time it was a terrible decision to send him into the crowd. I think it was Mike Dean, wasn't it? But you know, he talked about this. He talked about emotion. The guy said to him,
Have we not seen the real Arsene Wenger? Have you seen the way Arsene Wenger, one aspect of me?
And I thought that was, there was something really kind of...
There was Freudian slip there.
Freudian, yeah, but really, nice, yeah, really nice, but really telling also.
It's a good point you make. I mean, in his first 10 years with the club, he barely flinched on the sidelines, Arsene. You know, he would celebrate a goal, but you never really saw him lose his temper too much. And actually, in the second part of his reign, that's become pretty customary. You know, the sight of him squaring up with Mourinho, that's a great one.
Kicking the
water bottle, as you say. And just generally being much more demonstrative, much more obviously emotionally engaged. I don't know if that was just kind of, you know, the strain he was under during that time. I think that was a big part of it, you know, with the stadium move. He spoke in his press conference today about how that was the period at Arsenal that tested him the most, the immediate aftermath of the move to the Emirates Stadium. I don't know if it was just part of the sort of English football culture, you know, gradually pervading into him as well. He arrived from Japan, didn't he? Always seemed to bring a state of zen with him from there. But it has been a very, very emotional last few weeks, really, for Arsene and for us all. And I'm glad about that, to be honest. I think if he had remained entirely po-faced and not shown a crack, I think we probably wouldn't have had some of the closure that I think we probably will all need after such a long reign.
Yeah, there was some great stuff at his press conference yesterday. If you haven't seen it, watch it on arsenal.com, or we have a transcript of it on Arseblog News. You know, stuff like where they said, if you could change one match, what would it be? And he goes, it's always the last one. And then he went, not Leicester. That didn't mean anything, but he's talking about Atletico Madrid. And then he's talking about, you know, how things are going to be different. He said, or if it's going to be difficult to leave. Yeah, it's difficult because this is my life. There are 20,000 trees out there. I saw everyone like this. And he made a little small gesture of smallness. And now they are massive. I will greet every one of them before I leave and say thank you. I mean, I just love the idea of Arsene Wenger wandering around London Colney, this wonderful training ground that he built, saying goodbye to staff, to players, to administrators, and to trees. I just think there's something fantastic about that. But just going back to what you were saying about how he's dealt with it, and he talked about it a bit where someone asked, have you enjoyed this kind of long goodbye? And he said, there are bits of it. Parts of it I've enjoyed, parts of it not. I think the not part would be the fact that he didn't want to go, or maybe the circumstances of his departure aren't what exactly he had thought of. But I think we often talk about him as somebody who is protective of players down the years. He's never been one to criticize the players, even when they've deserved it, when individuals have merited it, when the collective has merited some criticism. He hasn't done it because it's not part of his beliefs. And you can say that's a flaw, perhaps, in his character, that maybe a bit more toughness might have created a better environment. But, you know, that's just part of who he is. And I think when we look at everything that's happened over the last 2 or 3 weeks, you also have to think that he's done the same thing for the club. He hasn't said a bad word about the club or anybody at the club or how this has happened or how it's gone down. You know, it's been hugely respectful from his side and from both sides, in fairness, which is the way it should be. But we know that football is a strange business, and people involved in football can often take little pops at each other. It's not to say it won't happen in the future, but while he's been manager, you know, he's made the best of it, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
I think he's behaved with real class. I think he's behaved with real class. And when you look at the way that he's managed, even these last few Premier League games, which are seemingly meaningless, he's really done it in a professional manner. And part of that is laying some foundations for next season, laying some foundations for whoever's to come. I think giving game time to young centre-halves, even when it's been costly to him. You know, he could have tried to play a full-strength side in every game to improve his record between now and the end of the season, but typically of the man, he's still got one eye on the future, even now, even if it's not his future directly. Because, as he said himself in his farewell speech, he's an Arsenal fan. And he does, I do believe that all through his time with Arsenal, he has wanted the absolute best for this club. He hasn't necessarily got everything right, of course, who does? But I think that the sentiment was always right. And I think that we've seen that in this period. And when you say, look, he didn't want to go, I think when you consider that, I think the dignity with which he's behaved is all the more remarkable. There's been no parting shots. You know, he hasn't had a dig at anybody. He hasn't sniped at the owner or the chief executive or even really at the fans, you know. And I think all three of those, even if they wouldn't be correct, could be understood. But he hasn't done that.
Yeah.
And I think he's, you know, class is the word that comes to mind when you think of Arsene Wenger, really, when you reflect on his reign and certainly the way he's carried himself throughout those two decades. And I think that's been present right up until the end.
Yeah, I was listening to the Arsenal Vision podcast, and I think Elliot made the observation that he seems to have had a weight lifted off him in a way by this happening. Now, maybe it wasn't something he wanted to happen, but when you look at how Sunday went down, and I know you weren't there, unfortunately, you had another little moment which we'll come to in a few minutes' time, but you know, the way he was embraced by the crowd, the way that the players responded for that particular game, if not the one against Leicester in midweek. But the whole occasion of it, the way it was marked, the way it provided I don't know too many people, unless something incredible happens against Huddersfield on Sunday, I don't know that too many people are going to remember Leicester and Huddersfield from this season. That game against Burnley is the one which is going to bookend Arsene Wenger's reign. Did you get that sense, or have you got that sense from him as well, that sometimes it takes for somebody else to come along and tell you that this is the right thing to do, and you're not necessarily inclined to do it, but once it happens, you kind of go, oh, yeah, okay, I see. Yeah, that's fine, and I feel maybe okay about this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've probably all experienced that in some area of our lives, professional or personal. When you're in a situation and you're so busy, you know, treading water, trying to solve problems, trying to... And that's what Arsene was like, wasn't it, in the last few years? It really did feel like he had become completely stuck to trying to deal with the minutiae, trying to fix the immediate. And it almost felt like he'd lost that broader sense of perspective. You know, there wasn't that grand plan in place because he was so absorbed in just trying to stay afloat. And now that someone's thrown him a ring and pulled him out of the water, I do think that I hope he can at least look at that bigger picture and see this is probably the right thing. And it was always going to end. It was always going to end at some stage, as all things must. And he has said that himself in several of his press conferences. He said, all things come to an end. And I really do think, and I take a lot of solace from the fact that of all the ways this could have ended, it might not be the glorious one in Lyon that we all hoped for, but yeah, there's still been some real positives and some really lovely moments to take from it. And in many ways, as fans, I think we have to look at it and see that it has been relatively well managed by the club in the end, perhaps too late, but in the end well managed. And I think that the fact that our results haven't suddenly picked up, it's not like we're suddenly unbeatable. There's no doubt still, despite all the emotion, that this probably is the right thing.
Yeah.
And what happened in Europe and what's happening on the road domestically, I think confirms that, and probably confirms that to an extent in Arsene's mind as well. So I think that clarity has been enormously valuable. I mean, imagine if we were in the position we're in now, getting the results that we're getting now without this clarity. I mean, it doesn't bear thinking about, does it?
No, it doesn't. I think the decision washed away much of the frustration. It really did, because it was one of those things that very few people could disagree with. And maybe when he stepped back and looked at it, Arsene Wenger, you know, he understands football. He has seen managers come and go, countless managers come and go in 22 years during his time at Arsenal and, you know, throughout his career in France, in Japan. Managers get sacked all the time. It is not an unusual thing. It's only at Arsenal where it has been an unusual occurrence in the last little while. And he must know that the performances and the league position and everything else, you know, when you take into account all the resources, it is the kind of run, or it's the kind of performance that does get managers the sack. And that's a reality. It's not personal. It's just what happens when you don't bring your team to the level that you need it to be at. And as well, when you don't reach the standards that you yourself have set down the years, which it's fair to say, have been very, very, very high. From day one, he has set hugely high standards at Arsenal. So it was inevitable that eventually there was going to be something of a decline, and here we are, and we're at the end of an era.
Yeah, and you know, I think Arsene Wenger probably should have left Arsenal a little while ago, but and perhaps he would have done had he not won the FA Cup in, I don't know, 2017 or even 2014. But imagine it had gone that way. You know, imagine Arsenal had lost that FA Cup final to
Wigan, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Or even the final to Hull. There would have been none of this fanfare. They wouldn't have anything like the Burnley game. There wouldn't have been that opportunity to say goodbye and celebrate his achievements. We would have just seen a statement on Arsenal.com the following week saying Arsene Wenger has left his position. Now, I wouldn't have wanted that. I wouldn't have wanted that. I do think that this opportunity to reflect has done great things, actually, for the relationship between Arsene and the fans. And there was so much discussion in recent years of how his legacy might have been damaged. Well, I think what's happened in the last few weeks has shown that that's nonsense. Like, it's clear that people are happy. Almost in the entirety of the Arsenal fans, everyone seems happy to remember Arsene for the good things that he did, because there were so many. And I think above and beyond all else, everyone recognises that whether you agreed with him or not, whether you thought he was a great manager or not, you can't doubt and you can't question the service that he's given Arsenal Football Club.
For sure, for sure. I know that this is the internet age and someone somewhere is frantically writing a think piece right now.
I look forward to my mentions now.
Well, actually, Arsene Wenger wasn't that great when you think about it. He didn't achieve that much. You know, he could have achieved more, no question about it, but he did do an awful lot for this football club, both on the pitch and off the pitch. And you only had to look at what happened last week against Burnley to understand the affection and admiration with which he is held by, I think, the vast majority of Arsenal fans. And that's a great point you make about if things had gone wrong, if Per Mertesacker hadn't scored that goal 8 minutes from time to rescue the semi-final against Wigan, or if we'd, you know, conceded that goal that Kieran Gibbs cleared off the line and gone on to lose that FA Cup final, it would have been much more acrimonious, and we would not have had that beautiful day out in the sunshine that anybody who was there, I think, will remember forever. And people, even if they were watching on TV or a stream, will remember that forever, because it was something very special.
Yeah, and who knows? Who knows what would have happened if we'd got to the Europa League final? You know, it's all ifs and buts, but there's no guarantee of success there. I do think that sometimes in life you've just got to be grateful for the way things have planned out. And the Burnley game is a beautiful bookend on the end of Arsene Wenger's reign. And I think, you know, we have to be grateful for that and try as best as we can and forget about the Leicester game.
Yes, well, you know, there's not much point even talking about the Leicester game, is there? It's I thought it was quite entertaining, actually, and just in the sense that there was nothing riding on it. There was no real stress about what we were going to do, if we were going to lose. The result was unimportant, really. You know, I thought we acquitted ourselves pretty well with 10 men. Once we got used to having 10 men, second half, I thought we played some really lovely football at times. The interplay between Mkhitaryan, Ramsey, Iwobi at times, Aubameyang, you know, we could have scored some goals. Leicester could have scored some goals as well. Of course, they did score some goals when it came right down to it. But, you know, it's not going to be that I remember at the end of this season, to be honest. But you were there. I mean, what did you make of it very quickly, the performance and the result? You know, you never like to lose.
To be honest, but I mean, yeah, the result I sort of made my peace with. It was a bit of a shame that Mavropanos was sent off. I think it probably was a red card, but it was just a shame because it kind of killed the game. And actually, well, it didn't. As you say, we came back in the second half, but that first half we really struggled with 10 men once he went off. And we'd actually started quite brightly in the first 10 minutes, and there were a few things I was looking forward to seeing in the game. I was looking forward to seeing Iwobi as number 10. I was looking forward to seeing Mavropanos, but there you go. It didn't quite pan out as I was hoping. The game itself, I mean, it does contribute to this quite extraordinary away record, doesn't it? I mean, Arsene Wenger must be desperate to put another bookend on that and close that off before he finishes. I mean,
would we be the only team ever not to have gotten a waypoint in a this it comes down to this calendar year bullshit anyway, though, doesn't it?
Sure.
You know, is that a thing? Is the calendar year, why is the calendar year a thing and not the season a thing? You know, our away record in the season is awful, but the,
yeah, that's not great either.
It's not
warning.
Great. No, absolutely not. But like, why do we have to? Why do we have to make something new up just to hammer home the fact that it's been awful? We know it's been shit all season, but yeah, I think he would still want something from the final game.
I mean, if you want to do it by season, I mean, I don't think you do want me to, but I've just looked it up. We are 16th in the away table on 13 points. To clarify, that is 3 points more than the bottom team, who are Stoke City, who were the first team to be relegated. So right. We are 3 points ahead from Stoke on the road. So it's not great across the season either, but it is. It does sound bad, doesn't it? The whole no points in 2018 thing. I just think it would be nice to get that out the way before a new manager comes in.
All right. Well, look, we spoke briefly on Twitter last night about this, where we talked about our predicted points for the end of the season, and we predicted the games. So just to remind everyone of what we predicted, both of us predicted a win against Watford, which we got. Both of us predicted a win against Stoke, which we got. We both predicted a win against Southampton. Did we beat Southampton, didn't we?
I can't even remember now. Yeah, I think we did. Was it 2-1? I think we did.
All right. Then there was Newcastle away. We both predicted a draw and we lost that.
Oh, dear.
West Ham at home. You predicted a win. I predicted a draw. So you win that one. We beat West Ham, right? My memory is
going 4-1.
4-1. Yeah, that was a great day. I remember it like it was... No, I don't.
And it was 3-2, the Southampton game.
All right. Then there was Man United away. We both predicted a defeat there, which was fine. Burnley at home. Now, I have to say, this came before we knew it was going to be Arsene Wenger's last game at home. You predicted a win. I predicted a draw. And then we both predicted that we'd lose to Huddersfield. So we'll wait and see what happens there. Our final points tally, mine came out at 58 and yours was 61. So I think we're on 60 points right now. So we weren't too far off.
No, we weren't too far off. I mean, essentially, we went on the premise that we were going to lose all our away games, or at least not win them. And we've been pretty successful there. I don't know how happy we're supposed to be about that, but there
no,
you go.
No, not at all. Not at all happy. Right, well, we go into this final game on Sunday. It doesn't really matter who we play or anything like that. It will be his final ever game in charge. You were at the Leicester game. You were working the Leicester game. You were at the press conference. And you had the opportunity to do something that I think probably many people might wish they had the chance to do as well.
Yeah, I was very lucky. I have been very lucky to be covering Arsenal and Arsene Wenger in a professional capacity and be in those press conferences and, you know, see his presence and his gravitas and his eloquence. But I took the opportunity just to hand him a letter as he was leaving his press conference, a letter that I'd written him, sort of expressing partly my thanks for the service he'd given the club, but also just to make clear this, the huge influence that he has had on my life, really. I mean, I think over the past couple of weeks, I've really been forced to reflect on that. And I'm not even sure, you know, we'd be doing this podcast if it wasn't for Arsene Wenger. He really did. His teams really lit my imagination and in a way that made me want to write about them and talk about them. And I think there's so much brilliant content surrounding Arsenal and so much creativity surrounding Arsenal. And I do think a lot of that can be attributed to Arsene Wenger's influence. I think, you know, his teams were a hell of a muse for us all. And it's been a real pleasure. It's been a real pleasure. It's been a hell of a ride, and there's been ups and downs, but it's been a real pleasure writing about his sides.
Yeah.
And, I as you say, I'm really lucky that I had that chance, and I'm sure he's going to be absolutely inundated with messages like that. But it was nice to hand him that and shake his hand and just feel that sort of personal connection and that sense of... I don't know, just be able to express some thanks, really.
Yeah. So how did it go down when the press conference was over. Did you have to like just leap up and run down to the front and grab him before he went out the door, or
just kind of? I mean, I'd sort of been a bit strategic about it. I'd positioned myself on his path, but I was a bit nervous about it because, you know, when a football manager's lost a game, someone as fiercely competitive as Arsene Wenger as well, you never know how receptive they're going to be. But he was in quite relatively good spirits for someone who'd lost last night. I think there has been a little bit of detachment from the results because they don't affect our league position. And you probably saw that from the fact that he engaged the Leicester fans when they were chanting at him to give him a wave towards the end of the game. So just as he was headed out the door, I just said, "Oh, Arsene, can I give you this?" And he looked at me like, "Who is this man?"
Because who is this scruffy vagabond?
How has this man in a tracksuit penetrated? To be fair, Arsene was wearing a tracksuit last night, so I felt an extra affinity with him, to be honest.
You were like cousins.
Exactly, yeah, brothers from other mothers. And I just gave him the letter in an envelope, and I said, "It's from an Arsenal fan." And I have to be honest, it was amazing how his demeanour changed. As soon as I said from an Arsenal fan, he sort of went from a bit quizzical and a bit uncertain, a bit apprehensive almost, to he immediately softened and he stopped and he made sure to look me in the eye and he said, "Thank you very much." And he shook my hand. And it's a very fleeting interaction. And while I've been in Arsene Wenger's press conferences and I've asked him questions and I've, you know, been in groups of reporters been with him, I would never say that I'd met him one-to-one in any capacity. And just to have that little moment with him and just have that exchange was very precious to me, to be honest. And having not been there on Sunday at the Burnley match, and I won't be at the Huddersfield game either, it was a lovely, you know, we talk about the Burnley match as a lovely bookend on his reign. I absolutely agree with that. Even for people who weren't there, I think it served that purpose. But for my personal relationship with him, I was absolutely ecstatic and over the moon. Because you never know, you know, you never think someone, a security guard's going to come over and say, "Who is this guy? Get him out." But he's a very gracious man, and he's been very gracious throughout the whole thing. And I hope, I think as well, I think inevitably, I think a lot of Arsenal fans feel like we really want to make our affection to Arsene clear, because it has been difficult in the last few years. And we have all, I'm sure, at some point criticised a decision that he's made or something that he's done managing the club. But I think it is important to try and make it clear that that is not mutually exclusive to having a great wealth of love for him and for the work that he's done. And I know that's been a big theme of the past few weeks, you know, talking about that and how it's perfectly possible to hold those two things together. But I think we as a fan base really want him to understand that, don't we? And I think that's what a lot of what happened at Burnley was about, about saying, "This has never been really about you," you know? And because we all just think, we do think the world of him, I think, as a guy.
Yeah. You could see that. That was the reaction. There was a lot of love for him. So did you put a return address on it? Are you going to go like full Stan if he doesn't write you back?
I did put like a return address, but I'm not expecting a response. Because as I say, I think those letters will be arriving by the thousands and thousands on the card. When he arrives on Thursday morning, there's going to be a few sacks of posts for him, I suspect.
Probably
a few bottles of champagne and red wine. But I did put return address. I did put my name. I did have I mentioned this. I did a YouTube video where I read the letter. You can check that out if you're interested. But I did have a panic that he might look me up and be like, "Oh my God, it's the guy who dressed up as me and wrapped along to the thrift shop." Suddenly, you know, call me a massive hypocrite.
You have trouble on your mouth now.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully not. Hopefully he just sort of reads it, has a little smile to himself, and that's enough. I'd be very flattered at the idea that he might read it. But I hope he does. I hope he does go through all that post, because I know he's not a man who likes to look back. I know he's not a man who is comfortable receiving accolades. But I just think now that it has come to an end, if there was ever a time to do it, it's now. And he should enjoy it. He should enjoy the admiration, enjoy the respect, because it has very much been earned.
Could not agree with you more. All right. Well, look, we're going to leave it there. We will be here on Monday with an Arsecast Extra, the first Arsecast Extra of what is perhaps the new era, or maybe it's a kind of, is it a limbo? Could we call it a limbo rather than the new era? It's sort of like a purgatory until we get to the new era. I don't know.
Yeah, it's limbo, and then depending on how difficult this hunt for a new manager goes, I think it might become purgatory. Yeah, we'll see how we get on.
See how we get on until Brendan arrives at the end of August. It'll be a fun summer. All right, man. Listen, I'll talk to you Monday.
Cheers. Bye bye.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Right, joining me now on the Arsecast, I'm delighted to welcome freelance football writer Tom Williams. Tom, how are you?
Very well, thanks, Andrew. How are you?
Good, thank you very much. Tom has written a book called Do You Speak Football? A Glossary of Football Words and Phrases from Around the World. Tom, we often hear about the universal language of football, but reading your book, while there are similarities and different ways to describe many of the same things, what strikes me is that this is not one language. There are so many things within football that are often unique and specific to different countries.
Yeah, this is one of the things I found. I mean, in the book, there are a lot of examples of terms that exist in all sorts of different countries. You think about words for nutmeg, words for the top corners of the goal, you know, ways of abusing referees, etc. But there are also lots of words and phrases and expressions that only exist in certain countries and that could only exist in certain countries. And I think those are probably the terms that I most enjoyed finding, things that say something about the country that spawned them and the attitude of that country towards football.
How did you go about gathering or curating all of these different phrases? Because, one of the things that's interesting about language, football language, or even phrases and sayings that are specific to a certain country, you have to get them exactly right for them to be authentic to the person in that country, if you know what I mean. So, you know, we could make a half-arsed attempt at a Spanish phrase, but it might not sound authentic and true to people in Spain if we start talking about it. But so, I mean, did you have to cast the net far and wide? Were you looking for this in very specific ways?
Yes. I mean, when it came to the major football nations, there was quite a lot of information that was available online or in books. I mean, plenty has been written about the football language of Italy, for example, of Brazil. But yeah, for the other countries, and even for those big countries, it was a case of constructing a network of contributors from all around the world, explaining the concept of the book to them, seeing whether they had any ideas, whether they had any suggestions, and then sort of working almost by a process of trial and error. And that was basically that the entire research of the book really was finding people in each of the countries that I wanted to write about and making sure that they got it, that they understood what I was looking for. And then once they suggested phrases and words to me, I then used that as the basis for further research and sort of went off and tried to dig around and find etymologies for things and get to the bottom of stories and things like that. So yeah, that was how it came together.
You mentioned nutmeg, for example, and it is one of those things that happens in football. That is one of the universal things of football, whether it's on the training ground or on the pitch. What was your favourite alternative? Well, I guess it's not alternative, but translation of nutmeg in a different language that perhaps spoke to what the act of that is?
I mean, you get some great ones because I think, I mean, you know, nutmeg itself is a term that we're very familiar with in the UK, and we know that the act of being nutmegged is extremely embarrassing. But I think other countries take that to another level. So in Germany, the word they use for a nutmeg is a Beinschuss, which is a leg shot. So the idea that you've been shot in the legs, and there's quite an interesting sort of sub-industry of nutmeg terms that have sprung up to describe items of clothing that had the nutmeggy been wearing them, they might have avoided being nutmegged. So, for example, in Argentina, they have sotana, which means cassock, as in a priest's cassock. And that is now used as a synonym for a nutmeg, and it came from the suggestion during matches that if a player who'd been nutmegged had been wearing a cassock, he might not have had someone play the ball between his legs because the fabric of the cassock would have blocked the path of the ball. Brazil, there's loads of different names for nutmeg in Brazil. One of them is janelinha, little window, which I quite like. They've got rolinho as well, which means little roll. It's quite a nice one in France, petit pont, meaning little bridge. Which is fairly self-explanatory. Yeah. In Bosnia and Herzegovina, they call it a suknička, I think that's how you say it, which is a skirt. And in Portugal, it's underpants. Right. So there, the suggestion is that, you know, you've kind of been almost literally caught with your pants down.
Yeah. I mean, some of this stuff is absolutely fantastic in terms of how descriptive it is. As I explained to you, I can't find my copy of the book where I kept the note for this one, but, you know, what we might call top corner or top bins for whatever reason in the UK and Ireland, a shot that goes in the top corner. Is there one in Brazil where it goes something about it's where the owl sleeps?
Where the owl sleeps, that's exactly it. Yeah. That's what they call it in Brazil and also, I think, in Portugal. In Spain, it's where the spiders nest, which is another animal one. In Croatia, it's taking down the cobwebs. In the Czech Republic, they refer to it as the gallows, the sort of meeting point of post and bar. So yeah, also different names for that around the world as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like hangman, isn't it? When you play hangman, it's that
exactly. Yeah, that little angle. Yeah.
I have to say, some of the German ones, I'm not saying there's anything to all of our German listeners. I'm not saying there's anything funny about the German language, but there are just sometimes two words that are put together that become very, very descriptive when you hear them in English. And there's one for the red card. It's called Arschkarte, which means a card from the back pocket, card from the arse, I guess.
An arse card, yes, basically, yeah. And they also have a traffic light card, an Ampelkarte, which is when a player gets a yellow card followed by a red card. And that's supposedly mimics a procession of colours on a set of traffic lights. There were quite a lot of funny ones I found in Germany.
Yeah.
There were certain nations that just seemed to approach the business of describing football with more humour than others, and Germany was certainly one of those.
Yeah, I liked Gherkin pass, which is a bad pass. I mean, I'm not. Does that come Gherkin? Obviously, cucumber. Cucumber is one of those things, isn't it? You either like cucumber or you hate cucumber. So obviously, whoever invented this was not a fan.
Well, Germany, curiously, has lots of expressions involving cucumbers, all of which have negative connotations. So you have a Gherkenpass, which, as you said, a cucumber pass is a misplaced pass. A disappointing game might be described as a Gegurke, which basically means cucumbering around. And you might call a dismal team a Gherkentrupp, which means like a cucumber troop. And the explanation for this is thought to be that the German word for cucumber, which is Gurk, G-U-R-K-A, comes from a Middle Greek term meaning a govros, or rather a Middle Greek term, a govros, which means unripe or immature. So I think the thinking there is that there's something in the stem of the word or in the sort of lineage, if you like, of the word Gurk that makes people think of immaturity, of things not quite being up to scratch, and that's where they have all these curious cucumber-related football words.
Yeah, I also liked Kampfschwein, which is translated in the book as battle pig, which is a hard-tackling midfielder. Why can't we just call them battle pigs here? I think that would be much better.
Yes, and it's just one of those gloriously German words that just sounds great and feels a great word to say. I mean, Mark Wilmots, the former Belgian midfielder and former Belgian coach, when he was playing at Schalke, he was known as Das Kampfschwein, the battle pig. And then another term they have for a similar sort of player is a Wadenbeißer, which is a calf biter. So the image there obviously is of a player sort of scurrying around, sinking his teeth into his opponent's legs.
Yeah.
Which is also quite fitting.
Yeah, we did. Like the ankle biter is something that's used across English football a bit as well. Obviously, being Irish, there were a few in there. There weren't too many because a lot of our football vocabulary is tied up with English. But for people who don't know, rather than shouting man on when you're playing football in Ireland, you shout house, which means watch your house, which means there's someone coming, basically someone coming to burgle you.
Yeah, and I must admit that was something that I hadn't been aware of.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I've even played football with Irish people, and it's not something I'd heard before. And then I've written about this in the book, but couldn't mention the expression "watch your house" without writing about "watch your house" for Ireland, which of course was the Ireland squad's official song at the 1994 World Cup. So that's got a mention in there as well.
Right. Yeah. There's a few. There's a Hatcher is somebody who just hangs in the goal mouth looking for the tap ins. There was I was looking for toe poke. And I'm not sure, did I come across it or not? Or
I want to think whether it's still in there. I think it's a bog toe, isn't it? Is the word you use in Ireland, or a toe? There was some debate. I've spoken to a couple of Irish friends about this, about whether the term is a toe bog or a bog toe.
Yeah.
But basically, there's bog in there, there's toe in there, and it basically means that I think it's either a toe poke or someone who's useless.
Yeah. I mean, a toe poke, a toe bog is what we always called it, but there is a debate going on. I know that I've engaged with the guys from Second Captains on this. There doesn't appear to be any agreement. It depends which part of the country you come from. It could be a bog toe or it could be a toe bog, and basically bogging the ball is kicking it as far as you can or as hard as you can. So that's something, and it's not necessarily applicable to real football as we know it, but what you guys call rush keeper, if you're playing five-a-side, or if you're playing with just your mates, we would call fly keeper.
Yes, I mean, I've heard fly keepers. I mean, it's funny, I mean, there are almost two different strands to a football lexicon in any given country. You have the kind of football talk of newspapers and TV and commentators, and then you have sort of, you know, school playground level. And I mean, you think about, I think even within, you know, even within the UK, the amount of difference between the names that people give to games that are identical. So I remember when I was a kid, I grew up in North Wales, and we would play a game where you have one goalkeeper and then it's every man for himself. And we called that singles. And I know that in other parts of the country, it's Wembley singles. In some parts of the country, it's just called Wembley. So you find that, and that is, you know, obviously replicated all over the world. These little games that we, you know, that you play with your mates, and you've got one name for it, and 5 minutes down the road, there's a different name for it.
What's also interesting is the fact that the language appears to be always evolving. There are examples in this which are quite recent. You know, you think of something like Bounce Back Ability, which was invented by, God, who was it again? You know better than I would.
Ian Dowie,
yeah, yeah.
When he was Crystal Palace manager, he referred to his side's Bounce Back Ability, and as a result of that, there was a campaign to get the word included in the Oxford English Dictionary, and the campaign was successful. But the researchers at the OED found that it had actually been used 45 years earlier in the context of American baseball. And to be honest, it's the sort of very inelegant coinage that you can imagine an American sport producing.
Yeah, the commentator.
So it, not strictly speaking an Ian Dowie invention, but certainly he brought it back into circulation. And, you know, in fairness, it kind of plugged a gap. Like, there isn't any word that does what Bounce Back Ability does. Yeah. You know, cumbersome word though it is, which I think probably explains why, you know, it is still used and it has sort of stuck around.
Yeah. Another thing that made me kind of curious was the fact that you say that clean sheet, something we all know as Arsenal fans, we're not that used to them just at this moment in time, but we know what they are. It's an expression unique to Britain.
Yeah, I mean, in other countries, they will talk about the importance of not conceding goals, of finishing a match without having conceded. But this idea of a clean sheet that we use, and I think it's an example of a term that we use quite unthinkingly without thinking about how sort of picturesque it sounds. I didn't come across another country that uses clean sheet to describe a clean sheet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a strange one. I would have thought that was something that would have been universal, a bit like nutmeg perhaps or something like that. There are some Arsenal ones involved in the England section of the book. Fox in the Box is one which has, I think, reverberated since that first came out. Thierry Henry talking about the need for a fox in the box. For whatever reason, Arsene Wenger thought that was Francis Jeffers, but it's one of those phrases that's lived on.
Yeah, and that was one of my favourite terms in the book, because it was a term with a genesis that could be mapped out very precisely. I've always found fox in the box quite an interesting term, because it's very close to a similar French expression, renard de surface, which basically means the same thing. Technically, it means fox of the penalty areas, fox of the boxes, but basically the same thing. And when I started looking into when fox in the box started to be used in English, it was the summer of 2001. Arsenal, as you will remember, lost the FA Cup final, despite having dominated against Liverpool, that late Michael Owen goal. And afterwards, Thierry Henry is in the mix zone at the Millennium Stadium and complains about the fact that there isn't a renard des surfaces, a fox of the boxes, in the Arsenal team. Someone like Owen, for him to play alongside. And then later that same summer, when Francis Jeffers pitches up at Highbury, Arsene Wenger uses his introductory press conference to say, oh, perhaps this is the fox in the box that people have been talking about. Obviously, things didn't quite work out for Francis Jeffers at Arsenal, but the term stuck and is now something that we use very often.
Yeah, I like as well the fact that we've kind of moved on. The only other language of football, I think, that we heard for many years was from Italy, where we heard about Catenaccio and we heard about a regista. And there are some interesting phrases as well in Italian, or used in Italian football. I like the one about the young priest. I can't remember the word now because my book is gone, but basically a player who's not quite ready yet. Is that the description?
Yes, this is one of many coinages by Gianni Brera, who was the great man of letters of Italian football, Italian post-war football. And he was responsible both for coming up with all sorts of different names for the various different positions and sub-positions on the football pitch. And he also had a great flair for nicknames. And he came up with the nickname Abatino, basically meaning young priest or young monk, for Gianni Rivera, the great, very stylish AC Milan player. The great, very stylish AC Milan playmaker of the late 1960s and early 1970s. And he described him as an Abatino. And his thinking there was that, yes, Rivera looked great on the ball and he could pick a killer pass, but he never broke sweat. He never got his foot in. He was very sort of pious and very nice, but there wasn't enough, wasn't enough work rate from him for him to warrant a place in the Italy team. And that expression continued to be used for years afterwards to describe that sort of player, a Mesut Ozil player, dare I say it, who is very good on the ball, great to watch, doesn't necessarily get stuck in as much as he could.
Yeah, and I suppose just going finally to, we use or we co-opt perhaps words from other languages. The idea of a manager in Italy and a manager in Spain as well, which I remember from when I lived there, being referred to as the Mister, is a really interesting one. Where does that come from?
Yeah, I mean, that is the legacy of the British coaches who went over to Italy and also to Spain in the early years of the 20th century and basically introduced that kind of British-style management to the game in those countries. They were sort of the first recognised coaches, if you like, and because they were British, they were known as the Mister, and it's stuck, and it's crazy now. I mean, you watch interviews with players from Italy and Spain. Even today, they still refer to the coach as Il Mister because it's so ingrained in the culture, and it's something that dates back over a century.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, there's so much stuff from so many countries. We've focused on really only a very small amount of it here. The book is called Do You Speak Football by Tom Williams. It's out now in a very lovely hardback. You can also get it on Kindle. Tom, it's been great talking to you. Thanks a million.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you very much indeed to Tom. You can find him on Twitter at TomWFootball. That is at TomWFootball. The book is called Do You Speak Football? It's available wherever you get books. You know where to get them. But if you can, and if it's possible, try and support your local independent bookshop. One that creates jobs. One that, pays taxes and things like that. I know it's not as convenient as some of the other options that are available to us these days, but you still get your book. You're helping a local business, helping people, put money back into your local community, etc., rather than some corporate behemoth that wants to ultimately replace every single human being that works with them with a drone or an android of some kind. You know what I'm talking about. You know. Either way, though, get the book. It is good. I think you'll enjoy it. So we're going into our final league game of the season. I can't believe another season has gone so fast. I know it's been trying, it's been difficult, it's been a bit tempestuous, there hasn't been a huge amount to cheer about in general, but it seems to have absolutely fucking flown by. Is it just me, or I don't know, it just really seems to have gone by in a flash. I read something a while ago talking about how as you get older, and I'm sure whatever age you are, it's all relative, but the older you get, the quicker life seems to pass you by, or the quicker things happen. You remember as a kid where like Christmas seemed to happen about every 6 years and your birthday was only about every 14 years. Now the birthdays are like, Christmas is like, oh, not Christmas again, for fuck's sake. But anyway, there was an interesting theory on this, is that as you get older, you kind of get into routines. You do the same things. You tend to do the same things anyway. Your weeks are filled with work. Your weekends are with the kids, or you're doing your sporting activity, or you're walking the dogs, or whatever it is, or you're going to arse, or whatever it is. There is a tendency to repeat the same things because they're comfortable and we like them, and that's why we do them. And because of this, everything kind of meshes into one. And what you need are new experiences. And if you do new things, time doesn't go by quite as quickly. I'm not saying it'll revert back to that childlike thing, but maybe we're going to have that next season where it's all brand new, where it's different. There has been a familiarity to the last number of years under Arsene Wenger. Some of the failings have been the same, the results, the performances. We've seen them all before. We've seen a lot of it before anyway, and maybe that has contributed to how fast this season has flown by. And next season, maybe it'll be long and slow and torturous and different, or it could be long and slow and successful and different. Who knows? All we do know is that it is going to be very different. Sunday is Arsene Wenger's last game in charge. I really hope that his last game for Arsenal is a win. I don't really care how. Just that we win. Just that we get 3 points. We can put an end to this terrible away record. All you can do at this moment is laugh because, you know, what else is there? And I would like for his final game in charge to be a successful one with some goals, some 3 points, and then that's it. That's it. From Monday, we have to think about what comes next. But until Monday, I wish you all a very happy weekend. Thank you as ever for listening. Remember, if you'd like to give the show a rating or review on iTunes, that would be very much appreciated. If you don't want to do that, that's fine also. I understand that completely. But I do thank you for listening. James and I will be here on Monday. Have a great weekend. Catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Hello everyone. It's me, Arsene Wenger Hawkins. As they say, all good things come to an end. And this is the end of our time together, after so long. Thank you for having me for such a long time. I know that's not easy. But above all, I am like you, I am an Arscast fan. I would invite you to support these podcasters and occasional characters who remain behind. They have special quality. Apart from Amaury Bischoff P.I., that guy is just a fucking weirdo. And he has very questionable personal hygiene. Even Mick Bentner smells better. I would like to finish in one simple sentence. I will miss you. Thank you all for having such an important part of my life. Thank you all, well done. Bye-bye. Oh yes, one more thing. Phil Collins is a cunt.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.